Welcome to the Eat the Evidence podcast, a show for cake and cookie decorators and sugar artists of all kinds. I'm your host, Kimberly Chapman, and this is episode number 40 on March 14th, 2019. On this episode, Monica Stout and Louise Pass from the San Diego Cake Show join me to talk about some of the things that go into running a successful cake show, plus some of their own cake art and other exciting projects. So whether you're on the way to that show right now, tuning in afterwards to reflect on what a great time you had, or listening in a far distant future where we hope the sugar arts have conquered all the ills of the world, let's get this show started to amuse and educate you as you work on whatever you've got going on. Joining me now are Monica Stout and Louise Pass from the San Diego Cake Show. Hello, ladies.
Hi.
Hello.
Introduce yourselves for a second so they know which of you are which. At least they'll be able to tell the voices apart by accent.
I'm Louise, the one with the British accent.
And I'm Monica, the one without the British accent.
And you have a cake show coming up. So it's March 16th and 17th, and we are recording this on March 4th. So what is your stress level right now?
Where's the alcohol?
There is no number to explain our stress level at this point.
Yeah.
It's always stressful the last 2 weeks, but then it eases out and everything normally turns out for the best. I think we just start, everybody panics about the last minute things. Did we finish this? Did we do that? Did we do enough? And it's just, but it always turns out great, but you got to have that stress.
Yeah. Because all that last minute uncertainty and
Well, and just, you know, we've got so many details that I don't think anybody understands the emails that go into putting on a show of this size. You know, I mean, you know, because you've worked in it, but they're just between, you know, just every single little detail has to be covered.
Okay. So which of you is doing which, or is it kind of like you're just a team, or are you doing separate areas?
I mean, we're pretty much a team. There is actually a third person as well. There's Veronica as well, who's our other co-chair. She kind of is behind the scenes with everything. She does all of our website, everything on the web she does. She takes care of everything from building it to, you know, uploading the classes, the ticket sales, everything. She takes care of all the competition stuff. And then we split the rest of it. Like, Monica does all the vendors. I do all the classes and the teachers. And then everything else is just kind of a mix between us.
Yeah. I do. Louise handles a lot of the social media. I handle a lot of the collateral, putting together all of our artwork, posters, logos. You know, that's all my, since I'm a graphic designer by trade. You know, we kind of split all that stuff up by who does what better.
Right. And then when it actually just hits, it's whoever's closest.
Exactly. Whoever can answer that email first, or whoever can ignore it the longest.
I'm good at ignoring. Yes.
I was just saying to Kyle, like, since the Austin show obviously just happened, that, and I'm still here in England, I said, because I sort of logged on to our Facebook page a few times, and I saw people asking really mundane questions, you know, schedule questions, the kind of questions where it's like, if you would just look at the website, the answer is there. I just answered on the fly, like, yeah, okay, fine, I can just do this so no one on the show needs to stress about this. But I said to her afterwards, I said, well, since I'm going to be here for next year too, do you want me to be your official chat bot and just like sit there and answer all the stupid questions? I didn't mean stupid. I meant insightful questions from the public. No.
That takes a lot. I know I have the club and show phone number is a second phone number on my phone. Mm-hmm. And it is all day, every day, just questions. Like, it's on the website. It's right there. Everything that you need to, that you're asking me is right there. It's been answered so many times, but people don't look.
No. I mean, we do get insightful questions. Often it's very specific. What does this rule mean? Like, you can tell someone has, because I've done this. I've asked shows, I want to do this thing. Is that okay? Like, and that's fine. We don't mind those. But like, we had a question on there. Some guy in the parking lot was asking where in the show his wife was on the Facebook page.
Yeah.
which kind of almost came like creepy. I almost wanted to say, can someone on the show floor find this man's wife and ask if she's okay?
Like, I know.
Does she need help?
Could you do a PA announcement, please?
Like, if anyone at the show is being abused, feel free to come to the Capitol Confectioner's desk and we will get you out. Like, it was, it wasn't, but you know what I mean? Like, who asks the Facebook page of a show in progress where their wife is?
Yeah.
He's
like, maybe you should just call her.
That's creepy.
Well, that was part of it. When he was complaining that he'd been calling her for 2 hours and she wasn't answering. And I was thinking, maybe she's busy. Like, maybe she's in a class. So I was really diplomatic how I answered it. And I suggested he go to the Capitol Confectioner's booth. But then, like, he was outside the show. Like, so he didn't want to pay to get in, is what.
Yeah, pretty much, probably.
That's really what it was. So she was ignoring him as well she should at that point. I was like, I don't even know who these people were. They were not people I knew. But wherever she was, I was cheering her on. It's like, you keep ignoring him. You're shopping.
Take calm, sister.
He then replied to the page to say that, oh, her phone was out of power because he found her some other way. And thank you and sorry. And I was like, all right. Yeah, I just answered, okay. Like, no problem, and I'm thinking, problem.
I don't think people really understand. They think social media is just this whole, like, I've said something, now you have to respond immediately. We're in a conversation.
Yeah.
And it's like, man, we're actually not.
No.
You kind of got to wait until I'm back in the moment.
Right.
Yeah, social media is a tough one to deal with some of these people.
Yeah, well, and especially globally, because when you're running a show, like, someone's coming. Okay, obviously, I'm in England right now. You guys are in California. We have an 8-hour time difference. Like, when I pinged you both this morning, my time, to say, is everything cool? Are we doing this tonight? I didn't expect you to wake up and answer me. It was like, I'm going out for the day, mm-hmm. So if you're going to be... If we have to cancel or postpone, just know that if you had then got up and pinged me, I would have been out of the house. So, like, we get, like, requests from Singapore at, you know, what's for Austin, 2:00 in the morning, and they expect an answer now. And they're like, why haven't you answered me? Why haven't you answered me?
Yes.
We had one of those this morning. You know, they sent an email at 8:00 on Sunday night, and at 9:00 on Monday morning, they were asking, you know, saying, I haven't had a response yet. Like, well, you know what? I've been in bed, so leave me alone.
How dare you?
Well, I'll forget that as well. I was like, someone will call. If I'm busy, you know, like, obviously, because it's on my personal phone. It's, you know, a second phone line. And if I'm on a call or, you know, for work or anything else, or if I'm busy, it can go to voicemail and I will call you back. And people will call 2, 3, 4 times. And if I don't answer, they then send me email messages or Facebook messages saying, I'm trying to call and no one's answering. I'm like, well, first of all, it's like 5:00 on a Sunday. I'm spending time with my family. I've got to take some time off. We are volunteers. But at the same time, you've called 3 times, leave a message. It does say, leave a message and somebody will get back to you. Yeah. I mean, what business is open 24/7? We can't be answering calls at 11:00 at night or anything else. I mean, you wouldn't be calling a store and expecting them to answer at that time of night either.
I think they almost, Facebook is fostering that, because, again, when you run a page, you see these Facebook will give you messages to say, you haven't answered this person and it's been 6 hours. And it's like, yeah, because I'm busy. Like, even Facebook's nagging you to be 24/7.
Yes.
I mean, you know, in my own business, I have a policy that I do not take orders or anything else. Even, like, I do a lot of image printing for a lot of bakeries and stuff in town, and they'll text me a picture. I'm like, you need to email it to me. I'm not doing it off of my phone. Email me. And if you start calling me on the, you know, on the weekend, I'm not available. You have to wait until Monday. I have business hours, and I'm not here at everybody's beck and call. And as soon as you foster that, you know, that attitude, they start to adhere to those rules. When you let one of them slip, they will constantly just take advantage and call you and email you at all times of night and day. And it's like, no, you need to call, you know, through my business time, and that's when I can deal with it. Crazy.
Yeah, it's like dealing with a toddler. Like, you know, if you ever give in to the toddler once, when you've set a punishment or whatever, then you lose. Like, that's it. It's like that with some of these people.
No, the rules have all been reset. Rules have all been reset at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. Just sign the house over in the kid's name. You're done.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And sometimes, you know what? It's like, it's almost never the people who are our friends who are doing this, partly because they don't want us to kill them.
Yeah.
But, like, partly, I think... the people who are our friends have either volunteered or they've been peripheral to the to our pain. It's the random person who's never been to a show before and wants to have their hand held, or it's the person who, the divas.
Yeah, yep, I get that.
It's time for a podcast helpful reminder. Are you working on a competition piece? Are you working on a client cake? When was the last time you checked the rules for your competition entry? When was the last time you read your client contract to make sure that you're spelling that name right? You're working really hard, I know, but every once in a while, you need to pause, go check that you're doing it right, because you're an amazing artist, but we all make mistakes. So right now, if you can pause, go check what you need to do, make sure it fits in the space that it needs to go into, make sure everything's spelled right, and then get back to work, because you're awesome.
Well, we can't go that long because I only have 38% on my battery, so... And we also have our final meeting tonight.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, well, so what happens at a final meeting?
I mean, this is just going over, it's like the last minute things of what still needs to be done, what's been completed, you know, weekend of who's taking care of this, that, and the other, to make sure everybody's still on board with what they've signed up to do.
Getting updates to see who, you know, who's fallen, who's dropped the ball and who's on top of things, that right. kind of stuff. So it's a lot of just mundane stuff. And our regular, because, you know, there's obviously we have a show meeting and then we have our regular club meeting and it's all kind of blends into one mm-hmm. at this point. There's not really any separation, but it is good to kind of get out there and just make sure everybody's on the same page and ready for the weekend. And but making sure that, like, literally nothing has been dropped so badly that we now need to panic and go, oh my God, what are we going to do? I mean, it's really just updates and just making sure everybody has done what they're supposed to do at this point.
Yeah, I know that pain too.
And uh-huh. and mixing frosting. That's another thing we do.
Yes.
Big corner. It's mixing batches of buttercream and making them into packets so we can store them in the fridge ready for the show.
Oh, wow. You do nice buttercream. Oh, my God. We do the shelf staple stuff.
Oh, yeah. No, we're doing
that's what
that.
We do, but we have to color it all.
Coloring it and putting it in. So because of the way our health department works, you can't just have like open stuff. Everything has to be individually packaged for each person.
Oh,
pretty okay. much. So if a kid walks up to do something, we have to give them a fresh bag with new buttercream to decorate their one cupcake.
Oh man, that's a huge environmental.
Yeah, we know.
With gloves, you know, the whole thing is just, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. But that's our health department.
Kids gloves because they haven't been trained on how to.
Yeah, they haven't been trained on how to use the gloves, so we're not allowed to give them gloves.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
But no, it is. It's, you know, the whole thing with, you know, like making all these different colors of buttercream tonight, I mean, it's a good couple of hours, and that's with the whole club
yeah.
pitching in.
Yeah.
That's, you know, whoever's at the meeting tonight is making buttercream packets in different colors. I mean, it's a whole club effort to do this. And it still takes a couple of hours.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I did for my kids' classes, which was only like, you know, I didn't have to do that many. I had like max 15 students, but like I had a couple classes where they had colored buttercream. You know, just like your basic, not even full rainbow colors, but, you know, five or six rainbowy colors. I mean, just me doing that by myself up in that horrid little hot room in the top corner at Austin. I mean, that's 2 or 3 hours gone. Just me. Doing
it's a lot of buttercream
for 15 that's for 50 well for when we did the kids table when I used to run the kids table we would get like you know 800-900 kids but we were only giving them white buttercream but we had fondant and sprinkles
so we get sprinkles and then but yeah we have like I mean we do enough for 600 cupcakes but then we have the cookies as well so
yeah
it's, you know the both but it's just yeah, it's a lot of buttercream.
It is. I mean, it was those, was it 25-pound bucket? Must have been. Was
yes.
It?
Yeah.
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 35 pounds, I think we get.
Yeah. And I used to say every time you open that, that smell that comes off that, that is literally the smell of diabetes.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
I love those buckets, though. I have some here. I brought them with, because at the end of the show, there were all these plastic buckets that nobody wanted. So I would, you know, when I ran the kids' table, that was one of the perks. I take home the empty buckets, and I made them yard buckets, and there was stuff that I moved here. And how I protected, like, the fragile thing was I packed it, like, in one of those buckets with another one upended and then, you know, taped all around. Mm-hmm. And so we have them in the backyard. Yeah. Yeah, they are. They're amazing. I mean, it's hard. You know, those things cost a fortune if you go to, like, a hardware store to get a giant bucket like that.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. They are good buckets.
But
we do like them.
Yeah, I mean, I did have to give away my stack of satin ice buckets before moving. There was no legitimate reason for me to have like 40 satin ice buckets.
No, my new favorite are the Renshaw because they're rectangular, so you're not wasting any space. They stack and fill space really well.
Right. If only the brands understood that it's how we recycle their packaging. It doesn't matter what kind of fondant's in it. It just as how can I use this bucket?
Yeah, it's all about the bucket.
It's all about the bucket. Because the Renshaw here doesn't come in buckets. It only comes in plastic packages.
Oh, that's right. It only comes in the blue package, doesn't it? The blue vinyl.
Yeah, and I mean satin ice. I do buy satin ice here on occasion, but it's a luxury import, basically. So
yeah, I forgot that Renshaw doesn't box in the UK.
No, like Jackie gave me a bunch once after I'd been at her studio, and I have now like all these small packets that she gave me, and they're like really hard to stack because they're slippery little plastic packages.
Yes. Yep.
So yeah, it's like I need to go to the Poundland, which is like the dollar store, and get like some cheap plastic like basket things or something, but then they won't be the right size, and then they won't fit in the cupboard, and it'll be so. Here in the kitchen beside me, we have IKEA bookshelves with the doors on them, and the doors are basically what's holding the pile of Renshaw in the cupboard. And every time I go in there for something else,
I have some of those as well.
Yeah. Every time I open the cupboard, like a bunch of them spill out and fall on the floor, and I'm like, I'll pick that up later because I went in there for something else. One of these days I'll organize it. Today is not that day.
I say that every day.
Yeah, right. Well, you have a cake show to do.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a problem. Takes up too much time to do anything else.
So how have your sign-ups been?
We always have it's always really, really slow until usually is we always see the pickup, like as soon as Austin starts, we see a pickup in our classes. That's always like every single year, all of our classes start to get more that last 2 weeks.
Right.
It's just, I don't know whether people think, oh, I'll wait, see what else is going on. Or is it all of a sudden the reminder that, oh, cake show season's kicked off, Austin started, need to start booking. Sometimes it's hard for the teachers because they need to know ahead of time to, you know, we already had to cancel a couple of classes, obviously, because teachers need to make travel plans. And if they can't make the travel plans because they can't hold on that long, then, you know, if they don't meet minimums, they have that right to cancel.
I don't think it matters where you are in the calendar. I think it's just, that's just people. They're just, they procrastinate to the end. And then we get this every year. I'm the one who writes the posts that say, people, sign up for the classes now, because in 3 weeks, in 2 weeks, in 1 week, because I'll do multiples of these, we are going to tell the instructors what their numbers are. And then every year, some of you are going to say, oh, but I wanted to take that class and now it's been pulled. So don't do that. Yeah. Just sign up now.
I had one. One of the instructors decided to cancel. It wasn't going to be worth their time coming. Perfectly fine. I did that. And literally after I pulled it and, you know, refunded those couple of students who had already signed up, five more people, the same, but within about 8 days, I think it was five or six people were just like, but I wanted to take that class. Mom, you had plenty of time to do it. It's been up since November. So it gets frustrating when it comes to that, when you know that somebody could have come because they would have filled.
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, people have to make travel plans, and I understand that. They have to get the best deals possible for themselves.
That's right.
Make it worthwhile.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter how much we stress. I mean, I think every show stresses and says, please sign up. And you can't advertise any earlier than you do. I mean, we start advertising in November. That's 5 months.
Yeah.
That's that's a long time, and nobody signed. People in competition don't sign up until usually the day before deadline because they're procrastinating.
Right, yeah. And then if they forget or they have trouble, they panic, and it's our fault suddenly.
Yes, and you know it's funny because we and our ticket sales are the same. San Diego is a notoriously last minute city, and so the first year we did this, when Louise and I took the show over, and we actually made it a paying show with vendors and class, Monday meeting before the show was literally 4 days before the, you know, it was Monday and the show was on Saturday, and we had sold 500 tickets, and we were like, well, that's it, we bankrupted the club, we're gonna, you know, it's gonna go under. And by the end of the weekend, we had 1,800 people come through. So from the Monday before the show until the end of the weekend, 1,300 people bought tickets. And that's really, we've noticed with us, that is the way that San Diego works, is we will not see ticket sales before.
Yeah, it's us too. It's
there's nothing you can do.
It's constant. And this is actually why we made it. Because we used to say that you could do, you know, competitor registration up until the Saturday morning. Like, if you came and paid your fee, we let you do that. And there were so many times that we would suddenly have, you know, 80 more cakes in a category than expected, and we hadn't put out the tables.
Yeah. Yes.
So that's why we had to make this week thing. And at first we said kids could still bring it, but then we had, like, hundreds of kids doing that. I mean, which is really their parents doing it. And so it was like, that's what we just had to say. Look, it's not that we want to be jerks and turn you away at the door, but we need to plan for this.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, there's a budget in place. How many tables are we going to hire, you know, to rent, and tablecloths and everything else? There is so much that goes into just our stuff. It's not like we can just go whip out more tables an hour before the show. We have a company that we rent from that brings it all in the day before. I mean, and we have somebody who donates all the tablecloths every year. So it's like, they have to know their numbers so they can make sure they have enough for us. And I mean, so yeah, the thing is, last year we did try just doing Saturday morning check-in, not registration, but just check-in. I don't know how you guys do it, because it's like, we're not doing that again. We're going back to Friday evening check-in and that's it.
Well,
that's tough.
It is tough. It's basically years of having it down to a science with software. Like, we have proprietary software that one of our members wrote us ages ago. And I mean, because I've run registration too, and it's basically, it's like we have flowcharts about how to do this. One of the things we try to do, it doesn't always work out, but we try to get the volunteers who are there Friday doing it are the same, at least mostly the same people on Saturday. And honestly, like really brutally, we've had to move some people off it. We've had some well-meaning people who like registration because it's a sitting job who can't handle the accuracy needed, which is as delicately as I can put that. And we've had to find other ways to use their volunteer services because it's a high-stress, high-paying attention type job.
Yeah. It's tough. And the thing is, especially with the check-in as well, for recategorization stuff, it does take someone who has the knowledge of all the different styles of cake and all the different techniques that you would use. And if someone's in the wrong category, they have to be recategorized. And all that kind of stuff just takes time. And it is tough when you're sitting there and you have, you know, 150, 200 people walking in at the same time with cakes. It does get a little overwhelming.
Yeah, especially if weather comes in. Last year was the first year we'd had severe weather. Which for a show going that long, that we've been, you know, lucky for a very long time. But now everyone's extra stressed and, you know, it was a nightmare.
That was Welcome to San Diego 2018. We never get never cold. We were, part of our stuff got flooded last year.
Oh, dear.
It rained the night before. And
the classrooms got flooded.
Classrooms. We were pumping out water from the classrooms an hour before classes were going to be in there.
Oh, sugar loves humidity.
And I showed up and three of my vendors had leaks in the roof dripping onto their tables.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah,
it was awful.
It was pretty horrific.
I ended up having to reverse and give the discounts for this year and but supposedly I've heard from the fairgrounds that they've repaired the roof completely because it has been raining so much. I feel like I need to head over there after one of these big rainfalls and make sure that it's not leaking.
Yeah. Jeez.
But yeah, it's crazy. Crazy.
Yeah, it's been pretty insane. But yeah, that was a little bit of a stress last year. Was just the amount of water, and it was freezing cold, and there was just nothing we could do. And it's just like, oh man, this is not fun.
No, no, God. Well, I mean, because when we had the humidity last year so bad, cakes and stuff were just melting during the day.
Yeah. Like,
things.
I remember, I heard that.
We have that every year.
Yeah, see, we weren't used to it.
We have that every year because Tomar is right on the beach. You know, where we are is literally right on the beach. And so by Sunday night, there are cakes that are just falling apart, completely falling apart.
Right, yeah.
They're all looking a little sad. Because, you know, we don't really get, I mean, it's weird. San Diego, we say we have humidity. We really don't have humidity. But by the ocean, it's definitely a damper air than it is anywhere else. And I remember a couple of years ago for one of our shows about 8 years ago, I wanted to use sugar bale.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. It was like, I'm trying to get it out of the mat, and it was just breaking because it was so dry. And, you know, where we are, it really is quite dry. But it was just snapping. And I finally got some to work. I got it on my cape, and it dried. As if you touched it, it just like broke like eggshells. It was so, you know, delicate and fragile. We had a huge rainstorm, and all of a sudden, the whole thing is nice and flowy and flexible and touchy. this is just crazy. The product just sucks in all the moisture. When I'm trying to make it, it was as brittle as anything.
Yeah. And should anyone try a sugar sculpture, oh, woe be unto them.
Yeah. it's tough.
Even
but it makes fun competition, right?
Yeah, yes. This is a new hurdle of the competition, is whose piece can be the least damaged by humidity by the end. Are you at least getting some of your classes selling well, hopefully?
Oh, yeah. We have two. Carla Pusha's classes are both sold out. They sold out pretty much, you know, straight away. And there's a couple of others that are near capacity. So the ones that are selling really well. I mean, every class pretty much has people in them. Some of them have more, some of them have less. But I mean, but what we have left that we haven't cancelled, you know, because we cancelled like 4 classes so far total, which is kind of like, you know, we always do. We always have extra because you don't know what people want.
Yeah.
It's every year you can pick and choose what people want, and then they end up going, no, they didn't work. So, yeah, it's, you know, we always have extra, and we always end up cancelling about 4 classes before the show, which we've done.
And Louise and I are terrible because we look at the classes and we tell ourselves every year, we can't have that many classes. We can't have that many classes. And then we look at the classes and we're like, oh my God, look at how fun this is. Oh my God, look at how fun that is. And we end up scheduling them thinking these are classes we would want to take. It doesn't work out. And every year we go, we cannot do this. And every year we do. So it's us just not learning our lesson.
No. But, you know, I know it's like, you know, in other shows as well, I mean, you know, everyone has extra classes and they always end up cancelling a few. Because like we said, you don't know what people are going to want from year to year. I mean, we do surveys every year of things that people want, and we try to listen to those surveys, and then we put those classes in for the following year, and then nobody signs up for them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's what I don't understand is, like, you people have asked for these things and then nobody signs up for them. You know, like I said, some of the classes are selling way better. Some of them are almost near, you know, capacity, and a couple have already sold out. Some are, you know, pretty close to what the teacher has put set as a capacity for themselves for teaching. But yeah, I mean, some of them are doing really well, and just others are just kind of, you know, they're doing okay.
So we're a week and a half out.
Yeah. So I mean,
this week, well, this is the week where we normally see the most pickup in those signups. So they should be, hopefully by next week, everybody will either be sold out or at least near to. Because that's normally how it happens.
Yeah. This all sounds very familiar. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, yes. We do have a couple that are left for on-site. If they, you know, if your class is Saturday afternoon or Sunday, we leave all those classes open for on-site registration. They can't do it online, but they can sign up at the show. And those normally pick up as well. If there's any seats left, people will pick up those classes.
Yeah, it's whether or not the instructor can justify coming. I mean, obviously, if the instructor has more than one class or they're also a judge, that helps.
Yes. It does.
Very yes. Nice, or a vendor. We have a lot. We have a few instructors who are vendors as well. So
that
makes it easier on them.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, we do try to somewhat have, you know, somewhat local as well. So it's not, they don't have to travel so far.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and one of our other things that we like to do is, you know, what we call our mini classes, which is kind of given people who are just breaking in. Just, it's only a small class, maybe an hour and a half or so, but it's something that they can kind of get their feet wet by teaching.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not like, you know, this big, they're going in with this master class. They're going to go in to the smaller classes, more the beginner stuff, the kid stuff, but it's getting themselves, you know, comfortable teaching. And, you know, we're about that. We want to bring in other people who we recognize as somebody who's up and coming and give them a chance.
Yeah, that's really important.
It is. I mean, we did that with, we've done that with Pepsi Garcia, and we've done it with Shaney. Shaney's awesome. Shaney Christensen. You know, she did a couple of minis last year. This year she's doing, I think she's doing two classes, doing one full class and another mini, but she's doing some amazing stuff. So it's nice to recognize those people and have them being able to put themselves forward on a bigger platform rather than just locally teaching in a shop or something. It gives them a little bit more recognition, I think.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, that's how we keep the industry going.
Yes. You have to. I mean, obviously, you have to have those people who have a name and will have those people who, you know, will attract people to come to the show, because obviously that's, you know, you have to have that. But then you also have to have those who are starting out to be able to keep growing the industry. So that's what, I mean, that's one thing we have said from the beginning, is like, we do try to bring in those who maybe not be on a national or global market, but are up and coming, especially locally. So we can kind of pull them in, which is nice.
And the other thing too is you do have the people like Natalie Sidesurf and Carla Pooch and those people who, those are, they're amazing instructors, but they have a pretty limited audience. You know, if you're going to be taking a Natalie Sidesurf class, you need to kind of have your, you know, have your skills at a certain level to take that class, to make it worthwhile. And we like to get these younger, you know, or up and coming teachers to come in and teach basics so that we can introduce new people to the sugar arts. We can introduce, you know, somebody who's never worked with buttercream before, how to frost a cake and how to pipe flowers and, you know, kind of just the stuff that you don't expect these high end teachers to teach.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And that was something I was pushing at Austin for a long time, was there was another volunteer and I, we kept saying, why don't we have a few courses that are how to cover a cake in fondant for the general public who are coming in and look at all this stuff and think, oh, I wish I could do that. Because, you know, then hand them a coupon to some vendors on the way. Like, it could be good for everybody. Mm-hmm. But it's really hard when the show hits a certain level. It's hard for the show to want to justify a classroom space to it is, but that.
You know, yeah. You guys have the same kind of footfall as we have. I mean, you have your dedicated cake people who are interested in cake, who are in the industry, but then you also have a lot of general public, and that's kind of where we are as well. We still have a lot of general public who want to come and support us raising money for Ronald McDonald House and want to see the pretty cakes, and we've always done free demos, even when we were back in the mall days, and they want to come and still see that. But that's what we've tried to offer is, you know, you have, all the TV shows now, all the kids are interested in doing stuff. So we're trying to do it at a very low price that moms don't mind spending for the kids to learn something basic, or even for the mom who wants to learn something, you know, for her kid's birthday cakes without having to go and buy a $300 custom cake.
Right. Exactly.
It's that kind of stuff. And that's why we try to aim towards the general public.
That's really cool. That.
We always try to get a beginning classes to, because you want to introduce new people to it. You don't just want to have, you know, the same people coming every year. You want to get somebody who came last year and took a beginning buttercream class, and this year they're going to take a beginning fondant class, and next year they're going to, you know, and in 3 years they're going to be taking Natalie's class
and entering the competition. To it.
And so,
yeah,
yes, and entering the competition.
Right.
And it is funny when you look around at, you know, what we offer to some of them. But like, again, so this year, you know, we've added in some new stuff this year where instead of just doing our little 45-minute minis, we've made them a little bit longer. Just, I mean, not much more expensive because we do try to keep them lower, but we've added more cookie classes this year. Then we've done the bilingual and the Spanish speaking. We've also added in, like with Grex, they came to us and said, can we have an area to go and just do free demos over the weekend?
Yeah, I know,
so
they like to do
that. People still have to sign up for them, but we've done them in English and in Spanish because we have a big Spanish market here in San Diego, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So some of those classes are bilingual. Some of them are Spanish speaking only. Some of them are free. Some of them are, you know, moderately priced. Some of them are a little bit more expensive. So there is something for everybody, I think, across the board.
Yeah, that's really cool. One of my favorite things at CI is just those open theaters.
I didn't get to look at all of them.
That's all I do now at CI is I go to those theaters and I record people for my podcast.
I didn't really see a whole lot of that at CI this year because I was just, I think I was just overwhelmed and in awe of how big this show is.
It is, yeah. It's
and then we look back and we're sitting, you know, we're walking around just going, wow, 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 and then thinking, wow, we're nowhere near anything like this. It's like, it really kind of puts you in perspective of what you are compared to this show.
Yeah, but let's keep it all in perspective as well. We are a show put on by volunteers.
Right. We've
never done this before.
Yes,
nobody's getting paid.
Exactly.
This is literally, Louise was in my fourth year when we started, neither one of us had done anything like this before. And so the fact that we didn't bankrupt the club and we did pull it off and actually made enough money to give Ronald McDonald House $10,000. You know, I think that's pretty impressive.
That's amazing.
And we don't have professionals who do this all the time putting on this show. And I know that CI is a business.
It is a business. This is true.
We are not a business. We are all volunteers. And so,
and again, over the last, we've always donated to a charity. And so I think the last 7 years now we've been Ronald McDonald House.
Yes.
We've given in excess of $50,000. I think it's actually closer to over $60,000, but we've done over $50,000 in the last 6 years.
Yes.
That's amazing.
We're really proud of. That's the one thing. It has been, since the club started with the show 36 years ago, it has always given back to a charity. So we used to do Junior Diabetes of San Diego. They've done... Well, there's been a couple of different ones over the years, but you know, now we're with Ronald McDonald and it's been amazing. I mean, if that is what we've done for 36 years, it's given, even, you know, back in the days where we only maybe gave $500 of what we earned because we didn't bring any money in because we didn't have this huge show. But it's something that I think we've really prided ourselves on over the years. And that is what we do. We are a fundraiser for giving back to our community.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so how did you two get, and I'm going to phrase it this way because I know it's this way, how did you get roped into this?
Roped in, there was a coup. We took it over.
We have two clubs. We have San Diego K Club and we have the California K Club.
Okay.
And most of our board members and members are members of both. And Valerie, who was our chair for our cake show, was going to become the president of California. She's like, I don't have the time to do both. So this is something the club had been talking about for years of like, oh, we need to change. We need to be bigger. We need to do this. And we had seen a decline in competition and everything. It was, you know, people were saying, we're not enough to come look at Pretty Cage. We want more. So Monica and I decided, then let's just do it. So we just kind of took the club on a ride.
Yeah, we kind of didn't ask very much as tell them what we were doing.
Well, we just said to them, will you please vote and say yes and have faith in us for this 1 year? And they did.
They did. Our treasurer, who we love, Carol, she's always been so supportive. She was actually deciding, okay, how much could I give the club to dig us out of the hole these girls are going to get us in? Can I give $2,000? You know, and she had it all in her head, already figured out how much money she would have to give, you know, she could afford to give to dig us out of the hole. And so the fact that she didn't have to give anything and we actually donated $10,000 was, she was pretty thrilled with that.
Yeah. And that was the thing, that first year when we took over, because obviously we were, back then, it was literally, the money that we had in our bank account was from club dues, from...
which is $30 a year.
$30
a year for each member. And then every month at the meetings, someone donates dinner and we all pay $5. So however many people have showed up for dinner that month, that money goes in. Our raffles every month at the meetings, that all kind of goes in. And basically that was it, because everything from competition to the Cupcake Corner and everything else that we've always done was the donation money that went to whichever charity. We started off that first year, we had $2,500 in the club bank account. And that's how we put on the first show, with $2,500.
Yeah.
I mean, just so people listening have a perspective, that's really small.
Well, like, that's really small considering that just to rent the venue is $10,000.
Yeah.
Like, and that's just to walk in the door.
Yeah.
That doesn't count anything else.
No. That doesn't even count electricity in the building.
No, that's literally to walk in the door. And then, you know, then you have to rent everything to set it up, and you have to have electricity, and there are a million details.
The pipe is right, the tables, the chairs,
Yeah, like, I don't know what the current operating budget is from Austin, because it's been a while since I've been to a board meeting, obviously, but when I was there, like, a few years ago, it was in the 60, 80,000 range.
That's about where we are.
Yeah, because there's going to be a lot of listeners who have no idea what these shows cost, and they might have thought $2,500 sounded like a lot. It's just really not.
Yeah, $2,500 is nothing.
That's nothing. No.
Yeah. Yeah, so, that barely covers our electric bill.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even want to think about
it. Yeah, that doesn't. I just got the electric bill quote today. That does not.
Yeah.
So I will tell you, the first day of our show, when our treasurer came in, and I had all the money, and I counted it out, and she came in to come and collect it from me, and I actually sat in our office crying. And all I could say to her was, we didn't bankrupt the club.
Yay!
It was like, I'm giving you money. This is profit. This is actual profit money. Because all the other bills have been paid. This is profit. We didn't kill the club. We haven't bankrupted it. Look what we did. So yeah, I mean, that was a pretty spectacular moment to say that we didn't kill our club.
If you came out the gate doing that, then big applause.
Yeah.
And we did 10 that year. And the last 2 years, we've done 15 each year. So yeah, we're doing okay.
You're making money.
Knock wood, we're doing okay.
No, that's it is actually really awesome. I mean, because you think about, like, the smaller shows that are run, you know, the IC's Day of Sharing, or the BSG shows here. Yeah, none of them are making money.
No.
Those days of sharing, those little, even some of the 2 day smaller shows, they're paying to do them.
Yes. Yeah. See, what we do now is, you know, we keep back a certain percentage of running costs to get us going. And because, I mean, really, it's not even the whole amount of money. It's the, you know, whatever we bring in, the money that we keep barely covers our running costs. Yeah. But because
it's a third of our running costs.
By selling Vanderbilt, that's what goes into that year's show for running it. Mm-hmm. That small amount that we keep in there is for the first lots of deposits and all that kind of stuff. Everything else has gone. We don't keep any of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's like every, you know, I mean, we pay almost $10,000 just for the tables, chairs, and pipe and drape.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's, I mean, people don't understand how expensive it is. It's so expensive.
Yeah. And we ended up finding a way to save money 1 year. I mean, it didn't save money that year, but over years it has, is by, we have now bought our own tablecloths, but that means as volunteers, we need to get them all. And that means someone else has to volunteer to go get them laundered afterwards. And we have to pay for storage.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we looked into that. Luckily, we got our tablecloths donated.
Okay.
And the Doll House, we're able to use some of their resources,
right,
to get some things donated. So the tablecloths for the competition are donated. We buy table coverings for the vendors and the classrooms and stuff. And again, we don't want to pay for the storage. We don't want to worry about doing. So we have not pulled the trigger to buy our own tablecloths yet. But it's been brought up every year, but so far nobody's willing to bite the bullet on that one.
Yeah, but
I'm not ironing.
No.
Oh, we don't iron them. No. Oh, we put them out on the tables and they've got fold marks. Like, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
But people don't think about that.
And we do. So we are lucky. We're able to get some, you know, some stuff donated because we can go to them and say, you know, this is what we're doing. We are giving our money to the Ronald McDonald House charity. So people are a little bit more willing to donate things. But even that, you know, it's not only just the physical cost, the monetary cost, it's the time cost. Mm-hmm. You know, at a certain point, and Louise and I have been running into this for the last couple of weeks, it's like, we got to the point now where things are not quite being handled as quickly as we thought they were being handled. And so at this point, it's too late to, you know, to try to shop around or to try to, you know, find donations. At this point, it's like, we just got to buy it because nobody has time to sit and do some, you know, comparison shopping for 3 hours because there's too much other stuff to do. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's just the reality of it.
Yeah. The volunteer logistics. I mean, we used to do collections for the food bank, which is great. And I think we even gave, like, for general public admission, you got like a dollar off if you brought a can for the food bank. Okay, great. Right.
Yeah.
Well, and we raised like tons of food, tons and tons and tons boxes, yeah, like those huge people sized boxes full of food. That's great, right? Well, guess what? Now a volunteer has to drive that. And yeah, I drove, yeah, some once in my Civic, like not, yeah, much of it, some of it. But so like a volunteer had to arrange with the food bank to get the boxes out, and a volunteer had to arrange, and it was a different person managing the food bank every year. So every year we'd have to come up to them, explain what we're doing and blah, blah, blah. And yes, we're legit, you know, do all the work. Okay, fine. So then we set up, then we had to, someone with a pickup truck had to go pick up the boxes. And which means you need a friend with a pickup. Well, it's Texas, so someone's got a pickup truck. That was not a problem there. But like, you know, not me and my Civic, or then my later a Prius. Like, yeah, I couldn't fit that stuff in. And then, yeah, someone had to carry literally tons of food out. And we had one year where it was so arduous trying to find people after the show to please cart this food. It wasn't that we didn't care. It was people scattered to the wind, or they're taking classes, or they're busy, and we got to move this stuff. We stopped doing it between the food bank being their procedures were difficult for us to mesh with, and this after effect, yes, of how do we literally ship tons of food. Mm-hmm. I don't think we've been doing it for the last few years.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing it. Well, this year I didn't see it. I don't remember seeing it 2 years ago.
I don't remember. I don't know if it's happened, yeah, honestly, since moving to Round Rock at all. And I think a couple years before, because it just got too hard. It's not that we stopped caring. It's not clearly not that people stopped needing food.
No, it's, yeah,
it's, yeah, it just logistically, yeah, it's a really lovely thing to think of. And then if you don't have the volunteer power to do it again, we're not ICHF. We don't have paid staff to do this.
No. Yes. And that's how we're, that's what we're realizing as well, is that it's just, there's only so much that, you know, and it's funny because everybody says they're going to volunteer, but it really, really, when you look at it, ends up being like a core group of maybe 12 to 16 people,
uh-huh,
who really give eight. You see, yeah, Louise says eight. Okay, we'll go with that. It really is the core group of like eight people who, you know, you throw it out there, who's going to do this, who's going to do this. And the same eight people keep raising their hands. And at a certain point, I mean, we had to tell one girl who's lovely and working her ass off, we had to tell her, no, you're not allowed to take any more on, mm-hmm, because you sit there and it's, you know, you ask for a volunteer and you're sitting at the meeting and it's crickets. And the people who care and want to help are the same people, and they keep raising their hands. And you have to at some point go, I'm not letting you do anymore because you're already doing too much.
Yeah.
You know? And that's where we are at this point, is we really have pretty much the same eight people just doing all of it.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Kyla Myers of Austin's That Takes the Cake show, president of Capital Confectioners. This year, we dedicated our show in memory of one of the sweetest, kindest people in the sugar art world, Lourdes Reyes of Gel Art Floral, who left us far too soon. Our heartfelt sympathy goes out to her daughter, Paula. Godspeed, Lourdes. I hope we meet again.
Okay, you've been on Cake Wars. Has it aired yet?
Yeah, it aired 2 years ago.
Okay, I was just going to ask generally about being on Cake Wars.
Go for it.
So what do you want to know?
Well, okay, what did you make? What was it like? How did you do? Because I haven't seen it.
We made an absolute mess of a kitchen. Our
was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and the brief was we had to make an epic battle. And so our cake was looked like a New York street with two apartment buildings, one tall, one lower, one four-story, one two-story. And it had a street in front of it. It had awnings. It had, you know, it was like a brownstone with steps going up. We had all the windows. We had
pizza joint.
We had all four Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in various fighting poses, with Michelangelo ziplining down a zip line between the two buildings. We had, what was the guy's name? The
Shredder.
Shredder. We had Shredder fighting with one of the turtles. We had a couple of the guys that Shredder's minions fighting. So we had seven sculpted characters on it. And we won.
Yay! Wow.
So there was that.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
And so I have not actually been able to watch Cake Wars because it doesn't air over here. But so was it like tournament style or just a one-off episode? Or
it's a one-off episode. Wow. And it does air there because Louise's friends have sent her...
Oh, where does it air?
It was on ITVBE.
Oh, okay. I'm going to have to go look.
So it has been on those, but it's 14 start, and then you have to create a small thing, which we created a mini cake with Michelangelo. It looked like a sewer tube, a pipe, a giant pipe, and he was popping out of the top with a piece of pizza in one hand and the sewer lid in the other hand, holding it kind of up above his head like a pizza.
Oh, that's cool.
And so after that challenge, one team gets eliminated.
And that's then the tasting challenge as well.
Yes, both of these are tasting challenges. And then after that, the three teams compete and build a big cake. And you have to put in, they give you ingredients that you have to use. We had to use pizza ingredients. We had to use tomatoes, cheese, pepperoni, what else?
Pineapple, there are all kinds of things.
Pineapple,
basil.
Mushrooms, basil. So we did we called it a turtle cake, and of course, and it was a...
No, the first one was the pizza cake.
The first one is the one we have to do. That's right. It's the pizza cake. And so we did a tomato soup spice cake with mascarpone filling and candied pepperoni inside it.
Oh, wow.
And it is still one of my best sellers. I call it the ninja pizza cake. And
it's really good.
It's delicious.
Great. It's amazing.
It's delicious.
That is so cool.
Yeah. So, but it's
candy
fun. It's
pepperoni with brown sugar and a kick of cayenne pepper is really good.
Yeah. So we got tomatoes in there. We got cheese in there with the mascarpone and we got pepperonis. We got three. We only had to put in two. We put in three of the secret ingredients.
That's really cool. Then that launched you to the next portion then.
Yes, it did. And that was my goal. I told Louise when they asked me to do it and I asked Louise to be my assistant, I said, here's the thing. I would love to win, but the goal is not to be eliminated first round and to have fun. And we had the best time. And we won. So we had it all. We got it all.
Well, congratulations. Yeah. That's really cool.
Yeah. It was super fun.
It was really fun. And now you know what we're doing at our show. We're doing our live Nailed It competition. Have you heard about that?
No, I have not.
Okay. So I don't know if you probably don't have Nailed It over there, but
we do.
Netflix.
That's on Netflix. I haven't watched it, but we do have that. Yes. So
okay,
I know the premise.
So what it is basically is three amateur bakers compete to recreate something. So there's a hero piece and they have to recreate it. And they have a limited amount of time to do it. And on the actual nail that they have to bake the cake and decorate it. And they have directions, directions of everything they need to do. They have recipes. But if you're not experienced at it, it can kind of turn into a show. So we are doing it live. We've partnered with Netflix. They've allowed us to do it. And we're doing it live. They're not filming it, but we have Sylvia Weinstock flying in to be our judge because she is the judge on Nailed It, one of the judges on Nailed It, the U.S. version and the Mexico version. So we're going to have pulled three names of contestants out of the audience, and we're going to give them 30 minutes to recreate something. We're still working on that. They're going to win prizes.
That's so cool. And now that I think about it, you guys were posting pictures of yourselves with her.
Yes. Right?
Yes, well, I did see that.
It was Vicky and I because, do you know Charity, Chef Charity George?
No.
Okay, so Chef Charity, she's local here to San Diego. She is rep for Chef Rubber.
All right.
She is what they call her, the secret chef behind the scenes of Nailed It. She creates all the hero pieces. And she brought Vicky Kane and I in for Nailed It Mexico to help her create the hero pieces because it was too overwhelming for her to do it by herself. So she brought Vicky and I in. So Vicky and I and Charity were the team that created all the hero pieces for Nailed It Mexico.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so Sylvia came in and she was one of the judges. So that's when I got to meet Sylvia and hit her up to come fly to San Diego and be a judge for us here. And Chef Rubber is our sponsor. He actually paid for Sylvia and her daughter's flights and hotels. And he's our main sponsor for our Nailed It competition. It's going to be fun. And we're hoping to do that to bring in the general public. I mean, Nailed It is a big giant hit, mm-hmm. Not just among cake artists, but among the general public because they can see themselves in it, you know, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, my husband's boss was like, oh my God, has Monica seen this show? And he had to kind of break it to him. Well, yeah, she actually has not only seen it, but she's up in LA working on it right now behind the scenes. I think the general public really loves it. And so we're hoping that brings in a little bit more general public, not just cakers.
Yeah, that should be big. I mean, most of the people who talk to me about Nailed It, I mean, part of it is I'm not going to watch it at night. Cause when I'm finished with my day, I don't want to see someone messing up cake at 10 o'clock at night. I want hardcore, violent, supernatural sci-fi, young men beating up monsters, and then I can go to bed. Like so I'm not watching cake TV really late at night. But like my friends.
Understandable.
Yeah, my friends who are non-cakers, or they're like, you know, WI ladies who know how to bake a cake, but they don't know anything about, you know, that royal icing is something you put on your Christmas cake. It's not something to decorate cookies with. You know what I mean? Like it's many of them can bake, but they're not sugar artists.
They are some of the best bakers ever.
Yeah, they are. They're the ones who are watching that. And so I can see that you will get high interest from general public because that's definitely who I know who watches that here.
Yes. Yeah, no, it is. It's fine. I can't watch it very often because it drives me crazy. I'm like, no, stop it.
Yeah, that would be the other thing is I'm afraid I'll watch it and I'll just feel terrible because I teach beginners and newbies. I don't want to see them fail.
Yeah, it's quite painful. Yes. So
basically, like, aside from running the show and running TV shows behind the scenes, are you also both running full-time cake businesses?
Yeah, I mean, I don't do as many cakes as I used to. I've kind of taken a step back in the last couple of years. I kind of pick and choose. I travel a lot, so it's for me, it's like to do it constantly is a bit hard. But I still take on, you know, I have a dedicated few customers that I always will do for. But I've taken a step back from doing that. I think, you know, with my other job as well, it takes up a little bit more time than being able to do cakes full time.
Right. So you have another job as well?
Yes.
Yes. Monica, what about you? Are you doing full-time cake?
I do, but I don't. I'm pretty picky about my orders just because I am doing a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff. Not only did I do behind-the-scenes on Nailed It, but I was I just got back. I was in L.A. for 3 weeks doing behind-the-scenes work on Sugar Rush, another Netflix show.
Right. Yeah.
So I was there for 3 weeks while we shot 12 episodes of that. And so I kind of have to pick and choose what orders I take because these shows, which I'm getting more into that, they come up fairly quickly. And it's like 3 weeks out, they'll call you and go, hey, you know, can you come up for 4 weeks? And hey, can you come up for 2 weeks? And so I try not to take too much stuff too far out because I just don't want to have to turn them down or refund their money or try to find somebody else to take things. So,
right.
And then I'm also a graphic designer, but I don't do a ton of that anymore because I just think I'm not pursuing it as much as I used to. But you know, cakes don't pay the bills.
No.
I got a kid at UCLA that I'm trying to pay tuition on. So cakes don't pay the bills.
No. I mean, that's why I technically sell cakes, but I just set my prices so high that no one will order one.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I am. I'm pretty, I'm not finding it as fulfilling as I used to.
I think you
turn that corner. It's like, you know, like I was working full time and doing cakes on the side, and I was knocking myself out every week just making cakes. I would take every order. And then it gets to the point where it's like, no, I'm only going to take select orders and I'm going to set a price minimum. But then I just started, we had this discussion just a couple of months ago, and it's just like, I got to the point where I was just like, I'm over big, huge cakes. I don't want to see any more big, huge cakes. I want to see pretty little cakes. That was my thing. And I decided at that point, I'm no longer going to do those big, huge cakes. I'm happy doing single tier. I'll customize it, but I want to do single tier like kids' cakes.
Yeah.
They're easy and fun.
Yeah. I was doing show cakes for Austin, and they were breaking me. And then having moved here to a small British kitchen, and now if I'm, you know, competing in Austin, it's got to fit under a British Airways seat.
Yeah.
I have really embraced miniatures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just feel like it has to be worth my time. Louise knows, I had the simplest cake this weekend. And the weekend before, I had done this very detailed, pretty large cake, a lot of stuff on it. And it came out beautiful. I was really happy, loved it. I had the most simple cake this last Saturday. It took me 5 hours. I baked the wrong flavors. I ganached it when it should have been buttercreamed. Once then I buttercreamed it and then looked at it and it was supposed to be pink buttercream. Now, I mean, it was like, what the hell is wrong with me? This cake took me the longest time and it was the simplest cake.
I don't know.
By the end, I was like, this was ridiculous. I've lost money on this, and I didn't enjoy it, and so...
I think I might know what's wrong. I think you might have a cake show in 2 weeks.
You think?
Yeah.
That was the thing. I baked the cakes and then came and worked on the cake show for about 5 hours it was actually Friday, and then went back to start working on it and looked at it and went, and actually didn't even look at it until I got the bottom tier crumb coated, and then looked at it and went, I baked the wrong flavors for both tiers. And so then had to start all over again, you know, at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So it just was one of those, you know, just like everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. And it was because I wasn't concentrating. My mind was elsewhere. So
yeah. Cause you were worrying about vendors and classes and pipe and drape.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So yeah. that's the problem.
But we got enough money to pay the remainder of the bills.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So,
yeah, if only there was a way of focusing, like if you had a podcast that you could listen to about cake stuff, except now we're stressing everyone else out as everybody's listening.
No, see, I'm like you. I have Ozark on playing, or Schitt's Creek, one of those. That's what I have going on while I'm working in my kitchen.
NPR podcasts tend to be what I listen to.
I listen to BBC Radio 2.
Yeah, so you're over there listening to BBC and I'm over here listening to NPR.
I love my Steve Wright in the afternoon. He's my wake-up call in the morning.
I started doing cakes while I lived in the U.S., listening to NPR before there were even podcasts. I had to tune in at the right time living in Las Vegas to listen to my precious Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And then I listened to it as a podcast. And now, because of that, I listened to Paula Poundstone. That's my new favorite podcast. It's a Paula Poundstone. Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. It's great. It's a great podcast. That's what it's called. Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. And it's funny. They drop occasional F-bombs, but not so bad that I can't have... Like, I can listen to it. My kids are home.
I listen to all the crime ones. I listen to Over My Dead Body.
Oh, right.
And Cold and Dirty John. And I listen to all of those.
But yeah, Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. It's funny, but it's not like you're going to drop your piping bag funny.
Yeah. Yes.
So
I may have to give that a listen.
Yeah, if you like Wait, Wait, because
I like Wait, Wait.
It's,
I always listen to that on Sundays.
The Paula Poundstone one, she's on with Adam Feldberg from also from Wait, Wait. So they make a lot of Wait, Wait jokes at each other. But anyway, I should probably let you guys go because it's like not like you have anything to do.
We have to go and get ready for our show. I'm actually going to go cook dinner before my husband, before when I leave, he has food to eat.
Yeah, well, and if I'm going to get to the meeting by 5, I have to leave in 23 minutes, so or else I'm not going to make it there, because it takes an hour for me to get to the meeting.
And I won't tell you that I'm still in my pajamas.
That was my phone.
But no, this has been good. I like this. It was fun.
Yes. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on, and have an awesome show.
Do you need the details? Do we need to tell you like dates and times and all that before we go?
I mean, we said the dates, but go ahead and say it out again because it doesn't hurt.
Okay. So it's San Diego Cake Show in Del Mar, California. The show is March 16th and 17th. We actually also have classes on this 15th while we're setting up. We have competitions, vendors, classes. We have the live Nailed It competition. Tickets are $10, $12 at the door.
Perfect. Well, come out. Have fun, everyone. It's going to be a fun weekend.
Oh, yes. And we also have an after party at the Belly Up Tavern, which is a world-renowned little club in Solana Beach, California. And we are the concert this year. Last year we had Beatles versus Stones, Battle of the Bands. And this year we have Super Diamond, which is a Neil Diamond cover band, along with Grace Band, which is an Elvis cover band.
That is awesome.
So, yeah,
oh my
it's
God.
A
I
lot
come.
Of fun. And we don't do the banquet. We don't do the banquet. We go drink and dance. So
banquets are a pain to organize.
So much of a pain. Nobody wants to go. You end up having to pay $100. This is $22 to go into the venue. And I got to tell you, the Beatles versus Stones was one of the best concerts I've been to. It was so much fun.
That is cool.
Well, Monica does that. I come home and drink tea.
Yeah, she shows up, has a half a drink, and then leaves. I stay out till much, much too late and dance and drink and then drag myself in Sunday morning the next day.
Can you guess who's the one who doesn't mind going home early and getting some sleep?
Well, see, I don't sleep anytime. I don't sleep ever anyway, so this is nothing for me.
Well, you can't sleep because you're doing TV cake business and cake show.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're not allowed. When sleep? There's no sleep for you.
No such thing as sleep.
It is me. 8:30. Good night.
All right. Well, thank you for having us.
Yes. And have a great show and try not to die because we don't have time.
Thank you. Perfect.
Thank you.
All right. Talk to you later.
Bye.
This has been the Eat the Evidence podcast. A warm thanks to all of my contributors, and you can find out more about them and the things discussed on today's episode in the show notes by visiting the podcast section of the Eat the Evidence website, eat-the-evidence.com/podcast. There, you'll find social media links as well as links to iTunes, Stitcher, and other places where you can subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. I've also posted detailed instructions on how to leave me a Facebook voicemail message and other options to call into the show. Please do feel free at any time to call in your very own cake formation, funny story, talk about a challenge you're having or have recently overcome, or rant about something driving you crazy. And if you like the show, please post a review on iTunes and share it with all of your sugar artist friends. This show was produced and edited by me, Kimberly Chapman. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, you are an amazing artist, and everyone involved with this podcast supports you. You can do it! Until next time, bye-bye, and good luck with whatever you're working on.
Answer that email first, or whoever can ignore it the longest.